The Guardian. Real-time language translation, driverless cars, mischievous deepfakes of celebrities doing things they never did, and killer robots. Today, these are no longer tropes of science fiction, but realities of the modern world, and it's all because of artificial intelligence. When it comes to AI, computer scientist Stuart Russell wrote the book, literally. His Artificial Intelligence: A Modern Approach, penned with Peter Norvig, now Director of Research at Google, is probably the most popular AI course text in the world.
Mainly because of the timing, it became very popular, and now it's the book that pretty much everyone learns AI from.
But that was back in 1995, when the next few decades of AI research were uncertain and distinctly less threatening. A few false dawns later, we're now confronted with the implications of our breakneck progress towards intelligent systems, programs that one day might have the capability to outwit us, so-called superintelligence. As a professor of AI at the University of California in Berkeley, Stuart still works at the cutting edge of the field, which means he's particularly well placed to ponder the implications of superhuman AI should we succeed in creating such programs.
I get calls from film directors, and they want to make a film about superintelligent AI, and they get stuck at the part where they want the human to outwit the superintelligent AI, and they want my help. And I keep saying, well, actually, no, I can't help you, because that's what it means to be superintelligent. You can't outwit it.
So how does Stuart think we can continue to control AI to make sure it works to humanity's benefit? And are we really sowing the seeds of our own extinction? I'm Ian Sample. Welcome to Science Weekly. Stuart stopped by The Guardian while in London to promote his new book, Human Compatible: AI and the Problem of Control. I started by asking him how the book came to be.
So the new book is basically about the question, what if we succeed in the long-term goal of AI, which is to create human-level or even superhuman intelligence? And if you ask the AI researchers, really at any stage in the history of the field, which is getting on for 70 years now, what if you succeed? I don't think any of them had an answer. Alan Turing asked himself this question, actually, so he's the founder of computer science and maybe of AI as well, in 1951, and his conclusion was, we should have to expect the machines to take control. The problem with making machines that are more intelligent than human beings is that you can't interfere with their behavior if they're pursuing some objective that turns out to be wrong because you specified it wrong. You told them the wrong thing to do. But because they're more intelligent than you, therefore more powerful than you, they get their way and you don't get your way. And if they're pursuing an objective, let's say you ask them to figure out how to restore carbon dioxide levels to pre-industrial concentrations and put the climate back in balance. You know, that sounds like a perfectly good objective to give to an intelligent machine. You know, if that's what they believe the objective to be, and that's the only thing they believe the objective to be, then an easy solution would just be to get at the source of the problem, right, which happens to be us. Getting rid of all human beings would solve the problem. So that's sort of not so good. But this problem of misspecified objectives is not something that should come as a big surprise to us. I mean, you can look at the Legend of King Midas, where he specified the objective, everything I touch turns to gold. The machine, in this case the gods, did exactly what he asked, and then that included his food and his drink and his family, and he dies in misery and starvation. You've got the genie in the lamp, who grants you three wishes, and the third wish is always, please undo the first two wishes, as I got them wrong. So almost all cultures in the world have legends like this about humans saying something about what they want and getting it wrong. So if you base your whole discipline around the ability of humans to specify objectives correctly, you're making a huge mistake. But that's the mistake that we made.
It will seem, I'm sure, to a lot of people that AI has suddenly taken off. It won't seem like that to you, I'm sure, but why is there that perception? Has AI taken off recently? And if it has, what's been the breakthrough, if there has been one?
I think it's correct to say that AI has taken off. There have been advances based on technologies that were actually developed in the early 90s. These are technologies that we now call deep learning, which means training very large tunable circuits, essentially, to fit data as well as possible so that you can then predict other examples. So that's been one of the holy grails of the field for 60 years, and it's now basically solved. Machine translation is another one. You cross the threshold from being not good enough for daily use to being easily good enough, and that creates this massive feedback process where people say, okay, now, because there are millions of products using this, if I make it a bit better, I can make billions more dollars. And so you invest huge amounts of money. So the thing that the public sees is the result of 70 years of research, but it's crossing those thresholds of economic productivity and value to people that is causing this huge upsurge in applications, in investment, in excitement.
And do you think that AI now is going to just get steadily stronger and stronger? I mean, AI has overpromised, I think it's fair to say, in the past.
Yes, particularly in the commercial sphere. The overpromising happened a lot in the mid-80s. There was a huge boom, not unlike the one we see now, but the technology just wasn't ready. And companies invested a lot of money and then found that it just didn't work very well. I don't see that happening now because the technology that's out there in the field being used actually works. And there are other technologies coming down the pipeline. Mm. For example, there's something called probabilistic programming, which is something that does explicit reasoning and whose meaning you can actually understand when it's been trained.
What does that add that you don't get from deep learning?
So it adds the ability to provide prior knowledge to the system. And this is something that comes naturally to humans, right? When we learn, we bring to bear everything we already know, and that results in the ability to learn accurately from very few examples. So if a child has never seen, let's say, a giraffe before, you show them one picture of a giraffe, you say, this is what giraffes look like. And from then on, they have no problem recognizing any giraffe and saying, oh no, that's not a giraffe because it doesn't look like it. So it's easy for humans with very few examples because we bring so much background to bear. And this probabilistic programming technology allows you to do that.
So far, so good, right? With better machine intelligence, we get instantaneous translations, smart speakers that obey our commands, accurate route finding apps, crazy apps that transform our faces into those of kittens, not to mention programs that trounce us at everything from poker to breakout. But as Stuart alluded to earlier, his book is more a warning than a celebration. So what was it that made him realize that the steady march of AI's progress was potentially a cause for concern?
It was the sense that problems in AI were actually being solved. Well, most of my career, you know, we toiled and toiled and toiled. You know, we made some theoretical progress, but very seldom did a major class of problems get knocked over and solved. And I think the first real sort of visceral feeling I had was watching the video of Big Dog. So Big Dog is a quadruped robot built by Boston Dynamics. And, you know, I'd worked on leg locomotion back in the early 90s, and it's a really hard problem. And that sort of stiff-legged side-to-side waddle of the typical movie robot. And then there's Big Dog, which is almost indistinguishable from an agile mountain goat.
It makes a lot more noise.
It's very noisy because it's got a petrol engine just to have enough onboard power. But this bloke tries to shove it over with his foot, and it reacts just like an animal would if you try to push over a donkey or something like that. It's so lifelike. So that was something that just hit me viscerally. Wow, this seems to be happening more and more often.
For me, concerns over AI really built up gradually as you saw what kinds of things were happening with the AIs that are out there at the moment, the ones that are used and developed by big companies. And you see discrimination across the board with some of these systems. I'm not saying there aren't good things that come from them. I think many good things come from AI. But already, even with these very narrow systems, which aren't particularly smart, and you think, well, if companies are already deploying those into the real world where they're causing real life consequences, whether it's people not getting jobs because their AI has sorted out their application form, or a driverless car crashing into someone or killing its own driver, that's the sort of messes we're creating with AI today. And they are very, very narrow. If you look at you know, even the best AIs. It might beat you at chess if it's a chess AI, but it's not going to be able to make you a cup of tea. They're incredibly narrow. They can't do anything other than what they were designed for. And I think what Stuart's getting at is the problem that comes along when these AIs can suddenly perform across the board a multitude of tasks. There's still some way to go before I get worried about that. And I think Stuart kind of agrees.
I don't think the risk is there right now because the machines still have a long way to go before they rival human intelligence. But we can see examples of how it goes wrong already. Probably the most significant is what happened and is still happening actually with social media, because the algorithms that dictate what you see, what news you see, what videos you see, what music you listen to, these algorithms are simple learning algorithms, but they affect billions of people for hours and hours a day. So they can have an enormous impact. And you might think, well, okay, they're trying to optimize click-through, effectively monetization. And you might think, well, the best way to do that is to send people what they are interested in. But it turns out it's not what the algorithms do. What they do is they manipulate people by propagandizing them, by sending them a sequence of content that gradually moves them to a point in the spectrum where they are more predictable about what they click on. Because predictability is what the algorithms want from you, because that's how they monetize you the most.
How does a liberal young man become a follower of the alt-right? You're about to meet a man who says he was radicalized by alt-right figures via their persuasive YouTube videos.
Something that's been reflected on globally is the use of social media to spread hate messages.
So it turns out, apparently, that extremists are more predictable than ordinary middle-of-the-road, not-quite-sure people. And so the algorithms, not because they care what your political views are, and not because they even know that humans have brains or political opinions at all, but the algorithms, in order to maximize monetary return, figured out how to manipulate people to extremes of the spectrum. And it wasn't deliberate on the part of the social media companies. It was that they just didn't think hard enough about the consequences of optimizing this narrow objective. Economists would say they didn't think about the externalities, meaning the things other than profit that the company gets to manipulate at someone else's expense. So social media are an example of what can go wrong. And in some sense, even these simple algorithms, they're protected by another superintelligent entity, which is the giant multinational corporation. And you can actually think of corporations as a form of machine that happens to have human components, but basically it's an algorithm for maximizing profit. And if you look at what happened with the fossil fuel industry, they maximized profit at the expense of the human race, and they basically did it in a way that outwitted the rest of the human race. They had a 50-year campaign. They knew that climate change was going to be a consequence of what they were doing, and they developed this long-term campaign to prevent the human race from interfering. And they succeeded. So now fast forward to the future, and it's hard to say exactly when this future is going to be, but it seems almost inevitable that at some point machines will be generally more intelligent than humans, meaning they can make better decisions in the real world, they can look further into the future, they have access to far more information than we do, and they can deploy that. So if you are in conflict with machines, in other words, if they're pursuing an objective that turns out to have negative consequences for humanity, there's probably not going to be anything we can do. This is a fundamental design flaw, and we've been protected from that so far because the machines have mostly been stupid and mostly in the lab, except, of course, for these corporate machines, which have been out there already. So that's the nature of the risk, and we need to solve this problem before we reach the stage where we will lose control.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to Science Weekly. Earlier, we heard some of Stuart Russell's warnings about the potential of AI, but also that we're still some way off from machines with human-level intelligence. So why should we even be considering potential future threats from super-advanced AI?
You know, if someone said, okay, we've just detected a giant asteroid that's going to hit the Earth in 62 years' time, let's say, we wouldn't say, okay, well, just leave us alone, come back in 61 years, and we'll figure out a solution, right? We don't know how long it's going to take to figure out how to divert or destroy this giant asteroid. So we have to start now. I mean, every day you spend not thinking about is reducing the chance that we'll be able to actually divert the asteroid. So it makes sense that we need to start thinking now about how to control AI systems. We don't want to be in this situation where we have to take panic measures.
All of which sounds very reasonable. Why not make contingency plans just in case? But if you thought AI safety was something those in the business agreed on, you'd be sorely mistaken. According to Stewart, the debate over the need to control AI is in danger of descending into tribalism.
I've had colleagues suddenly, probably for the first time in the history of the field, say, well, actually, we don't need to worry because we're going to fail. We're actually not going to succeed in creating human-level AI, and therefore we don't need to worry. And I think this is just disingenuous, right? I don't think they have any good technical reason for saying this. It's just a way of making this problem go away. It's like, you know, shutting your eyes and putting your fingers in your ears and saying, no, 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 it's not real. And they have no good argument for it.
Another point of contention in the field comes when experts are asked how soon superintelligent machines will arrive.
I said in a strictly off-the-record session that happened to be basically published in the Daily Telegraph a few minutes afterwards.
Which I would argue is good journalism, actually.
So I said that I thought, I was pretty confident it would happen within the lifetime of my children.
So Stewart thinks we're headed for superintelligent machines somewhere towards the end of this century. But there's certainly no consensus among those who work on AI. When asked about the chances of superintelligent machines appearing this century, various surveys of researchers have returned wildly different predictions. So what will an AI need before it can reach human-level intelligence?
One of the major things we haven't worked out how to do is to really understand language, to, let's say, read a physics book, understand physics, go out and invent the next kind of transistor or a new type of radio telescope or something like that.
So that's, get actual knowledge out of text.
Right. And deep learning systems have real problems storing knowledge. That's not kind of what they do. They learn skills, they learn capabilities, but knowledge, which can be deployed for all sorts of different things, that's a weakness. But I think that this decade or the coming decade, the 2020s, we will see major breakthrough in language understanding. And that is what would enable AI systems to then know everything that the human race knows. Another big one is nested actions. This is a really important part about human intelligence, that we create these new actions, and then we can put that together to make more complex plans.
You almost build up libraries of these higher-level acts that within them have all these other...
Yes, but everything is nested within nested, within nested actions. And this is what enables us to build and manage this really complex civilization and to navigate through it. At the moment, we have some inkling of how machines can take advantage of that if we supply them with all this nested hierarchy and libraries of actions. But we don't have a good idea of how they could invent it for themselves. If they do, then they will start to be able to come up with plans and behaviors in the real world that flummox us. And so those two things, language understanding in order to get at human knowledge, and then this ability to function in the real world over long timescales and make plans that go a long way into the future, those two steps would, I think, take us 80% of the way towards human-level intelligence.
Obviously, it's not all doom and gloom with AI. As Stewart points out, such powerful machines could be enormously helpful.
On the positive side, you know, we've seen lots of nice things coming out of AI. We're starting to see improved medical diagnosis. We'll see self-driving cars that will reduce accidents on the road and improve fuel efficiency and all the rest. But with general purpose AI, you get a complete transformation of the economy because it could be building houses, railways, schools, educating your children, preparing a dinner party for 100 guests. It's capable of doing it all. The only real thing it needs is a differentiated set of physical tools. But it's a single global intelligence that knows how to do everything. But of course, if we don't solve the risks, there won't be any upside.
As well as identifying the potential pitfalls ahead, Stuart has ideas of his own on how we should shape AI to avoid the most dangerous possible outcomes.
Here's what I'm proposing. What we do is to say the only purpose of the machine is to be of benefit to humans. But the machine does not know exactly what that means. It does not know all of human preferences for how the future should unfold. And it knows that it doesn't know that.
The gist of Stuart's idea is that you never put a concrete goal into a superintelligent AI, because if you do, it will pursue it single-mindedly and havoc ensues. Instead, the AI is always slightly uncertain about what it is exactly that you want. So when I say make a coffee, because it won't know exactly how I like my coffee, it will allow me to correct it and even turn it off if I think it's making a complete hash of it, rather than trying to enslave me and make coffee regardless of what damage it causes around the house. That's the general idea of having the AI trying to learn my preferences rather than actually being told that it needs a particular goal and then pursuing it. But isn't it always asking, am I doing this right? Is this what you want me to do? And it's like, look, that's not what I bought a 50 grand AI for, to be asked at every step of the way.
Initially,
shall I hoover in the lounge as well as the kitchen?
Point is, we don't have to pre-program this asking. It's actually the optimal solution that the machine finds for the problem it faces, which is to help you even when it doesn't know what you want, right? Things that it messes with, that it's not sure which way you want them messed with, it needs to ask about that. So it does not want to do anything that would give you a reason to switch it off.
So what do we end up with? If this works, what do we have?
I think at least from the point of view of the technology, we have something that is safe, that is permanently deferential to humans.
To the individual owner?
To all of us. And I think this is an important point, actually, and I haven't got it completely sorted out yet. But you can't have machines that care only about their owner and nobody else, because then they will be, you know, oafish and boorish and extremely antisocial, and they'll go around stealing money from people.
Sure.
As long as they can do it undetectably, they will be unbearable to the rest of us. So they have to have obligations to everyone else on Earth, but they can't have too great an obligation. Otherwise, they'll all go off and help the most desperate people on Earth, and you'll be very disappointed that you shelled out £50,000 for this machine that disappears as soon as you open the box. So these are some of the questions that we have to solve. But I think the whole purpose of this approach is that no matter how intelligent the machine becomes, no matter how capable it is at solving this new problem that we've set it, it's still beneficial to us. So there's no longer a problem of control.
Are you optimistic?
I always think that problems have solutions. But when I see how things are going with the lack of progress on what seems to be an absolutely necessary treaty, I do despair sometimes, yeah.
Having read Stuart's book and talked to him about AI, I feel I'm at least clearer on how computer engineers might one day build one of these general purpose AIs. I think he lays out quite plausibly the different milestones that AI researchers have to hit, the different kind of things that an AI will have to be able to do before it can become one of these broad general purpose AIs. What I'm less clear on and less confident about is whether his solution's going to work, whether this idea of learning human preferences is going to keep AI safe, and whether it's also something that companies will go for. The ideas itself seems to need a lot of development. I think there's a lot of work needed there. But again, with the track record of big tech companies, I just wonder if they're really going to embrace AI safety to the point that it seems they might have to. That's it for this week. Special thanks to Stuart Russell. We'll include a link to his new book, Human Compatible, in the episode's description at theguardian.com. Bye-bye, and thanks for now.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.